Hello, once again, SEC fans. Welcome into That SEC Podcast, your SEC podcast. I am Cody McClure, and I'm joined, as always, by Michael Bratton, SEC Mike, here for episode number 23 of the podcast. We are already through nine full weeks of SEC football, so season's just flying by. Mike, how you doing, my friend?
I'm doing good, Cody. I'm just, I'm kind of stunned over here. I can't believe that Jim McElwain got fired before Butch Jones. I don't think anyone could have predicted that, not even heading into the season, but I'd say as soon as 2 weeks ago.
Well, I believe you could have gotten McElwain at, 40-1 odds at one point when BetOnline released their first SEC coaches to be fired?
Yeah, I think that's right, and I think that was only behind Nick Saban, and I want to say maybe Dan Mullen. I think were the only two that had worse odds than McElwain.
Yeah, and maybe Kirby might have been close by there too. I'm not sure since it was just year two for him, but yeah, crazy, man. Just crazy the way things have transpired for Florida over the last few weeks. But that's what happens when, you know, I mean, you're an offensive coach and you're brought in to coach that side of the football. Like, if anything's going to get better, it should have been your offense. And through three seasons, we just saw little to no improvement, or they may have even taken a step back from Muschamp. I mean, would you say that?
Yeah, I mean, especially because, you know, Muschamp's guys started to cycle out of there, especially his key defensive players. And we saw this season there was a clear drop-off on the defense, you know, because these are more McElwain's guys now. Now, there's still plenty of talent on the defensive side, but it's just not the same caliber. And, you know, I didn't come up with this, but I saw it several people noting that, you know, kind of the beginning of the end of McElwain was when he, I don't want to say dismissed, but essentially told Will Grier to, you know, he wasn't welcome back. And I really think that was the beginning of the end, as strange as it is to say.
Yeah, it's just, it has been so bad. I mean, Florida has looked so bad, just not up to their own standard. Now, the fact that they won the division to me in back-to-back years and then immediately fired him just, like we said, 9 weeks into the season, not even at the end of this season, I think it really speaks to how bad the SEC East has been, mm-hmm. that Florida's administration would put that little emphasis on the fact that he had won that division in back-to-back years. I think that just tells you how bad it has been.
Yeah, and I tried to do some research on coaches that have been fired coming off back-to-back SEC divisions, and I couldn't find one. And not only did he accomplish that feat, but you know, in another realm, he got back-to-back extensions both off seasons in Florida, and I think the administration's got to take some heat there for, you know, I've heard all week that you know, that relationship had deteriorated to such a point that's what escalated this decision. But you know, I got to question why they're giving him extensions if the relationship was that bad. I don't think we'll ever get an answer, but I think that's one thing the administration has to answer for.
I can tell you one thing I'm questioning that, and I don't mean to sound like a conspiracy theorist here, but the fact that McElwain, now tell me if I'm wrong on this, he basically agreed to walk away for $4 million instead of the $12
million? Right.
Okay, so he walks away with $4 million. And so he's cool with that and just kind of letting that $8 million slide. And not only that, but Florida had the whole credit card fraud thing with all the players that were let go. You know, of course, Antonio Callaway, Jordan Scarlett, all those guys. To me, this just seems a little bit fishy. I'm not saying there's anything going on. I'm not really trying to imply that. But it just, it doesn't really stack up to me the way this is all shaken out.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you, and you know, I think it could also obviously go back to those death threat comments. I think once McElwain made those comments, I mean, I think that press conference really, really hurt him, and I think that was the final nail in the coffin. I think, you know, barring an upset of Georgia, I think they were going to get rid of him even if it was a one-point game. Obviously, it was a blowout, 42-7, and you know, Florida, from the first couple of drives, I believe they gave up three touchdowns in four drives, and I mean, you just kind of saw that one coming. I don't think anyone expected him to survive the weekend after all the speculation we were hearing.
I think most Florida fans probably pretty happy with the decision. I don't think a lot of people were really pumped up over how great those offenses he had were. So I imagine lots of elation from Gators fans. Now, on the flip side, Tennessee fans, kind of the opposite right now, because Tennessee still has not made a move on Butch Jones. And I'm sure you saw earlier, John Curry has finally broken his silence on that. He did comment a little bit on the future of Tennessee football, but he really didn't say a whole lot about it. And so I think Tennessee fans are really not feeling good about the state of their program.
Yeah, they deserve, you know, they deserve some answers. You know, the team's obviously not living up to expectations. That's pretty obvious. They're not living up to the talent that they have. You know, this team is very poorly coached. But I do kind of question, you know, I'm not a big fan of, you know, just kind of questioning everything without knowing what's going on behind the scenes. I really think it's idiotic when people say, you know, now Florida's so far ahead in Tennessee in these coaching searches. It's incredibly naive to think that these conversations aren't happening, you know, with agents and search committees and what have you behind the scenes. I mean, let's say Florida is targeting Dan Mullen. I can guarantee you they're not even going to speak to him this week because he's got a game to prepare for. They're, you know, they can't speak to these guys until the end of the regular season anyway. Now, of course, they can talk to their agents, they can talk to their representatives, and I'm sure Florida's doing that, and I'm positive that Tennessee's doing that as well. So I don't really buy into you know, Tennessee's taking a step back here. I think it's more about having a plan in place. You know, what's the next phase? Does it help Tennessee to get rid of Butch Jones? I wouldn't necessarily think so, because, you know, sure, there's been plenty of stuff that's, you know, from the arrests to the middle finger to the fans to, you know, losing these games. But is there a solid answer to just turn it over? I mean, do we even know who the interim coach would be? I think until there's a solid answer there, I understand why they're going with Butch Jones.
I imagine if they did go with the interim route, it would probably be, I would guess, Brady Hoke or Larry Scott. I think either of those guys could get it done. Now, the thing with Tennessee and Curry remaining silent and all that, here's the way I look at it. I agree with you on the part where I'm not out on John Curry. I don't think that he's just sitting around twiddling his thumbs. I think that he's well aware of the situation. He's well aware of what's going on. So the people who think that about him, I do think they're incredibly wrong. I think Curry is probably working to figure out what he needs to do. To me, the reason that I think a lot of Tennessee fans have been upset is just the lack of communication. I think a lot of people would like to have just heard something. And finally, you know, late Monday night, we did hear something. But, of course, people still are not going to be totally happy until Butch Jones is fired. So, but I'm with you there. I do think that that John Curry is probably doing his due diligence, I would guess. I would imagine. Because if he wasn't, then he simply wouldn't be doing his job. And I don't know why you would hire an athletic director like that. So I'm with you. I refuse to believe that for now.
Now, we can't talk about Tennessee without bringing up John Gruden. And, you know, as we've stated before, you know, kind of as things march closer and closer towards Tennessee making a decision, making a coaching change, I mean, I don't know what your feelings are. I'd like to hear it. But, I mean, I still understand, you know, people are very You know, they're not ready to buy into the groomers, but Tennessee fans, you know, they're starting to come around to it. It seems like it's really got the fan base going. And I think, you know, one of the biggest things last Friday, John Gruden's odds has become Tennessee's coach. You know, he's now the favorite at plus 250. That dropped, you know, a late Friday, and that was a bit of a bombshell, created a huge stir. What do you make of John Gruden being the betting favorite to land the Tennessee job? And that was a bet online. That was on Friday night. And now Odd Shark also has John Gruden as the betting favorite to be Tennessee's next head coach.
You know, the more smoke that we see coming through the trees, the more that I believe there's some fire underneath, because Vegas knows what they're doing, and I don't think that Vegas would just set those odds. I don't think that there's enough money pouring in on Gruden for Vegas to make a move that drastic.
Right.
You know what I mean? I think that there's got to be some sort of substance there. Maybe it's the fact that ESPN, with the layoffs and all that, I've seen some talk about that. Maybe that has something to do with it. Maybe just...
And not only layoffs potentially, which it sounds like there will be once again at ESPN, as you noted, but I don't know if you saw this piece this morning, but from James Andrew Miller, the man who literally wrote the book on ESPN, he says that ESPN has worked all their deals out to where if they drop the NFL package, meaning they would no longer air Monday Night Football, you know, they're still going to get all their rights fees. They've worked that in with all their distributors. Now, that could mean nothing at all, but essentially what that means is if they drop Monday Night Football, their prices will stay the same. And I mean, it could just be ESPN doing their due diligence, but essentially what that means is that's a good indication that they're going to drop Monday Night Football potentially. So John Gruden's future there, I mean, it's not even secure at this point, and that just adds more speculation. I mean, it's just we can't go a day without more and more signs, in my opinion, of John Gruden coming back into coaching. And he could obviously go to the NFL, but if he comes to college, I think the only destination that makes any sense is Tennessee.
Yeah, and you know, Mike, it's getting to the point where you start to hear things in Knoxville, and I've heard things from, I mean, we're talking about people like that work for billboard companies and that work for, you know, different police departments, and people, they saw this or that at the airport. I can't really think of any examples that specifically, but you know what I'm talking about. There's enough of this stuff coming out where you almost think like, surely to God, everyone's not crazy, are they? Like, I mean, and if somebody's just fabricating these things, if they just want to keep flaming the groomers, like, that's fine. But it comes to a point where there's just so much smoke right now. There's got to be something going on, I would think. And I mean, I don't think that everyone is just fantasizing over this and making up lies. I mean, I guess they could be.
Yeah, and I don't know if you saw the video Sunday night, I believe it was. There was a station essentially interviewed John Gruden leading up to the Monday night game, and they asked him about his coaching future, and he repeatedly said, you know, we'll see. Now, what that means, you know, it could be literally anything, but I mean, he could kill the speculation in an instant, saying he's not interested in coaching. But he keeps on going further. And I wasn't watching Monday Night Football, but it's been reported by several people that he even said, I miss coaching. He said that tonight during the broadcast. You know, take that for what it's worth. But like I said, it's literally every day where there's something new with Gruden. And I don't know. It's coming to a point where, you know, there's just too much evidence to ignore it.
Yeah. Well, it's certainly going to be interesting to see however this thing unfolds at Tennessee. It's going to be a wild circus, like it always is, with the Tennessee coaching searches. Florida, of course, getting theirs underway already. So really interesting stuff coming out of Gainesville and Knoxville the last few days. And then, of course, you've got some other schools. Mike, I've heard people saying there could be 6 to 7 jobs potentially opening up. You've got Arkansas, even though Bielema just got a decent win, if you want to call that decent, over Ole Miss Saturday. Texas A&M, they finally got beat again, and Kevin Sumlin, his seat's still hot. So the month of November here is going to get really fun.
Yeah, and, you know, going back to that Arkansas game, that was the first game of the weekend last week, and that was a really fun game. You know, I think you got to give the Razorbacks a lot of credit. You know, one thing under Bielema lately, they just can't close games. They kind of fall apart in the second half. This game is the complete opposite. They were getting dominated. I believe it was 31-7.
It was, yeah.
And Santos Ramirez, he stripped the ball and recovered it. I mean, it was a tremendous play. And I noted, you know, that could be a momentum play. And it turned out, I mean, they just basically dominated the game from that point. And, you know, you got to give Arkansas a lot of credit. Bielema was fired up after that game. You know, it was kind of reinforced what he had been saying, that, you know, if this team can just close a game, I mean, they continue to fight. I was really impressed with Arkansas, and, you know, their schedule, you know, we noted in the past that the back end of their schedule is very manageable. Now, can they turn this in? Surely they'd get some more momentum this week with Coastal Carolina, but if they can win two in a row, I was almost, you know, fully on firing Bielema, but if all these other SEC jobs come open, you got to wonder how attractive that Arkansas job is compared to a Tennessee, a Florida, potentially Texas A&M. I mean, they're looking at being at the bottom of the rung, in my opinion, and it may serve their best interest to bring back Bielema.
Yeah, and I think you could very well be right on that, unless they already had a guy who they just knew would fit well at Arkansas. Because I do think that you do have some good prospects, some good candidates coming out this year. But it depends. It depends kind of what the up and comers do. Because if Tennessee were to get Gruden, and if Florida were to get Scott Frost or Chip Kelly, or somebody like that, then I do think there would still be some interesting names available for schools like Arkansas. But, I don't know. They're going to need to win, just thinking of their schedule off the top of my head, they'll need to upset either LSU or Mississippi State to get to a bowl, right? And that's even if they beat Coastal Carolina and Missouri.
Right. Yeah, so
it's going to be tough.
It is. And speaking of going to be tough, I mean, I've been cautioning people for weeks and weeks. You know, a lot of people are throwing it out there. Kevin Sumlin's coached his way off the hot seat, you know, and just like always, I mean, they kind of fall apart in November. They got physically dominated by Mississippi State. They lost 35-14. And one stat that I hadn't realized, I believe they've lost like 8 out of 9 SEC West home games. The last 9, they've lost about 8 of them. They haven't won one at home since 2015 or something like that. When Texas A&M's funneling all this money into this program, that's the thing that's been killing Sumlin. He just can't win these home games. And, you know, they've got a tough stretch. They got Auburn coming to town. And I believe you've told me that the road team basically wins that game every year. So
yep, every single year.
If that happens again, I mean, the losses are going to keep stacking up. And I think there's so much bad blood there already. All the momentum that A&M has, I mean, it could disappear very quickly.
Well, Mike, you want to go ahead and get into some of the lines for this week's games? We have 8 games this week. So the docket looks a little bit better as far as you have more SEC teams playing this week.
Yeah, let's get into it. Let's see. Let's start with, kind of the more boring games here. Coastal Carolina at Arkansas. Let's see here. You thought it would be a 21-point spread, and I said a 30-point spread, and it opened at Arkansas minus 26.5, so I got that one.
Well, there you go. See, that's I didn't have your line to go off of, so we changed it up this week, and I had to pitch the lines first, so we'll see how big of a difference that ends up making. That game, I'm not real surprised to see that higher than I thought it would be. I just didn't really know how Vegas would judge Arkansas in this one, considering that they just haven't been very good, you know. And coming into that Ole Miss game, they only had 2 wins against lower-tier teams. So we'll see.
All right. Now let's talk about one of the other boring games. UMass at Mississippi State. Mississippi State is rolling a little bit. You thought the line would be Mississippi State minus 28. I said Mississippi State minus 24, and you actually nailed it perfectly. It opened at Mississippi State minus 28.
Okay, good. Well, that gives me a little bit of self-confidence. That shows me that I'm not just totally going off of what of your lines. So that's good. 28. I think that's a fair number in this game. What would you say? I mean, UMass, they played Tennessee close, but we know Tennessee's not a good football team. Although UMass, they've won 2 in a row, right?
They have, but prior to that, I believe they lost the previous 6. So
yeah, that's true. But they're 2 for 2 in their last 2.
And I've also been told, I don't know a whole lot about UMass. As you noted, we saw them against Tennessee, and they actually played Tennessee pretty tough. I think you could kind of credit that more to Tennessee not playing so well. But the quarterback is questionable for UMass. That's obviously not a good sign. I believe these teams played last year, and
it was like 47-35, I think.
Yeah,
that
was the score exactly. So these teams know each other, but you know Mississippi State's a completely different team this year. I don't think this one's going to be close at all.
No, I don't either. I would expect State to roll in that one.
Okay, Western Kentucky at Vanderbilt. Let's see. You thought Vanderbilt would be a 1.5-point favorite. I thought Vanderbilt would actually be an underdog. I said +2. And Vanderbilt opened at a 9.5-point favorite. So we were both way off, but you were closer on that one.
Well, I guess technically I was closer, but I'm shocked that that may be the biggest surprise on a line that I've seen this year. Just looking over Western Kentucky's results and based on what Vanderbilt has done, I mean, I know they're an SEC team and it's a bit different, but a little bit shocking to me that Vanderbilt would be favored by that many.
Yeah, and these two actually played last year and Western Kentucky won that game. It was 31-30, so they match up well against Vanderbilt. Vanderbilt just continues to slide. Now they did play a better game last week against South Carolina. We thought that would be a little bit closer. It turned out to be exactly 7-point game. But yeah, I'm not sure. Given nearly double digits to Western Kentucky, I think I would lean towards Western Kentucky in that one.
I believe I would too. Western Kentucky has. They haven't done anything this year to make me think that they wouldn't be competitive in this game. I can't remember their record off the top of my head, but I think they're, what, like a 5-2 team, something like that, 5-3.
Mm-hmm.
So, I would expect that to be a closer game.
Okay, here's another. This is the noon game on ESPN, Auburn at Texas A&M. You thought Auburn would be favored by 16. I said Auburn by 13, and it opened at Auburn minus 12.5, so I was only 0.5 off on that one.
Oh, congrats. You nailed that one. I didn't know what to think. I thought 16. I thought my number was a bit high, but at the same time, I really feel like Auburn will cover that.
Yeah, and I tend to agree there. Obviously, you know, we've already went into November. Texas A&M has already showed up. This series has been dominated by the visitor. Auburn's coming off a bye week. You know, they looked fantastic in their last game against Arkansas. They just destroyed the Razorbacks. This is going to be a tough one for Texas A&M. As long as Auburn can stop A&M's running game, this shouldn't be a contest, in my opinion.
Yeah, Auburn should be fresh coming in. They are the road team, so they would be expected to win this game. I do think that Auburn covers that. That may be one of my favorite bets of the week here with the 12.5-point spread there. So props to you, though, for nailing that one.
Okay, this should be another interesting game. This is a noon game with a lot of variables, obviously. Florida's going on the road to Missouri. You thought Florida would be a 4.5-point favorite. I said Missouri minus 1, and it actually opened up at Missouri minus 2, so I almost nailed that perfectly.
So Missouri is favored over Florida.
How bizarre is
that? It's a bit shocking to me. I really didn't think that Missouri would be favored in this game, even with it being on the road for Florida, and Florida obviously playing with an interim coach in this game. But I feel like Florida will go into Missouri and win. I don't see anything from Missouri that makes me think they should be favored in this game. I mean, I know Florida's really bad, but...
Well, Missouri's coming off back-to-back impressive performances. Now, obviously, those were two non-conference games against Idaho and UConn. You know, if Missouri could just get a not straight non-conference schedule, they'd probably be a national title contender. But once they get into SEC play, it's a vastly different story. I just think with so many unknowns here, Randy Shannon's the new interim coach. I don't know if you caught this earlier, but Randy Shannon said they're going to reopen the quarterback competition. I think that's a move. Something that needed to happen weeks ago. You know, Malik Zaire, the only significant action he got prior to the Georgia game was Michigan, and he looked terrible. But at least against Georgia, he looked serviceable. I mean, he was running the ball well, and that was giving him more than Felipe Franks could. So it'll be very interesting to see who starts that game at quarterback for Florida. There was obviously a lot of bad blood there with McElwain, but based on everything I've read and seen, it seemed like those players really, really loved that guy and played hard for him. So if they get down early in this one, it could be a long game for Florida. This one is just, I just don't know where to go with this one at this point. I just thought that Missouri would be a slight favorite.
Yeah, it is a bit of a head-scratcher. Missouri, to me, though, is just a really bad team against SEC competition. And I feel like their performances over the last couple of weeks may be a little bit overinflated, because Drew Locke has always put up numbers like that against bad teams. He's hardly ever done it against the SEC. Now, he did throw for quite a few against Georgia, and I was impressed with that. But I don't expect Missouri... They've hardly been competitive other than the Kentucky game in the SEC. So I think Florida will go in and win that. I think they'll get the boost from the interim coach. And by the way, Mike, humble brag here. Big week for me. Randy Shannon actually follows me on Twitter. So it's
nice.
It's nice to see that I'm now followed by the head coach of the Florida Gators. So I'm... That's a big thing for me.
How did you manage that? Can you tell the listeners how to get a SEC coach to follow you?
Honestly, man, I have no clue. I have no idea. He followed me, I guess, maybe a couple years ago, a year and a half, a couple years. Maybe it was something I wrote.
Mm-hmm.
I really don't know, man. I have no idea. But he does. So that's cool. I hope he wins over the job.
I
doubt it's going to happen.
You know, somewhat related, there's a running back coach for Auburn. His name's Tim Horton. And he, on like a bi-weekly basis, he'll follow me and then he unfollows me. And he's been doing it every 2 weeks for about 3 years. So I got a feeling that, he's not in control of it. It's either a robot or someone on his staff or something. But for whatever reason, they love following me and unfollowing me. And I get the notification about every 2 weeks.
Yeah, that's weird. Maybe he's just trying to build up his followers, and then and some people do that, you know. I don't know. Maybe he's trying to get a bigger job somewhere. If you follow SEC Mike, he can lead you to the promised land.
That's what Tim Horton hopes. Okay.
Yeah.
Now, this is a sneaky good game here. It's the CBS game this week on 3:30. South Carolina at Georgia. You thought Georgia would be an 18-point favorite. I said Georgia 13.5, and it actually opened up at Georgia 22.5. So you were much closer on that one.
Georgia 22.5. Okay, yeah. See, that one was for me. Now I do think I still tend to lean that Georgia may cover, but South Carolina is 6-2. They've been one of the more respectable teams in the SEC. I think they are the second best looking team to me out of the East. Now, I still don't think that they will they won't have a good showing against Georgia. I still don't think they're very good, but I think they're they are the best team in that big group of losers that is the SEC East. But a key thing to remember here, as you know, Georgia has won every SEC game they've played this year by at least 25.
You know, and I think there's going to be some variables in this game. Now, I'm going to go ahead and predict this. I've been saying this for a while, you know, since the games played Saturday. But I don't see how there's any way that Georgia does not debut in the college football playoff rankings as anywhere but the number one team in the nation. Now, will that affect them in this game? I don't know. But South Carolina still has a chance to win the SEC East. You know, everyone's writing Georgia into the championship game. If South Carolina can win this game and Georgia loses to Auburn or Kentucky, which would be much more likely that they lose to Auburn, South Carolina still has a chance to go. So they've got a lot to play for. You know, clearly I think this is going to be a really bad mismatch for South Carolina. So I understand the high line, but I think closer to a 14-point game is what this will really be. But I'll be very interested to see, you know, a lot of people are building up Georgia to be Alabama East. But, you know, until we've seen them, you know, continue to disregard rankings and polls and projections, you know, for much longer than 8-9 weeks, I'm not ready to buy into the fact that they're totally disregarded like a Nick Saban coach team has.
I was just going to say, I think that Georgia and South Carolina, I do think it's for South Carolina, will they control their own destiny? They would still need Georgia to take a loss to Auburn to get to the SEC championship game, correct? Because their losses are both inside the conference.
Yeah, that's correct. And then South Carolina would also need to beat Florida the following week. But if they managed to do that, I believe they would go to Atlanta over Georgia with a head-to-head win. So that's certainly something to consider. Now, obviously, it's an outside shot, but I think that's what makes this game even more interesting on Saturday. All right, the 4 o'clock game on SEC Network, Ole Miss, Kentucky. I thought Kentucky would be a 10-point favorite. You said Kentucky 3.5, and you were much closer. It opened at Kentucky 4.5, so you were only a point off there.
That's not too bad. You had Kentucky. What was your line on that one?
-10. I think that, you know, Ole Miss just kind of fell apart against Arkansas there, and I kind of, you know, that may be too much for them to come back from in my mind.
Yeah, I think that Kentucky, they've just been in so many close games, and for me, I think that this is another game that has the potential to be one of those. Even being in Lexington, they've kind of shown that they play to their competition. Mm-hmm. You look at their scores, and that's just sort of what we've seen outside of the one blowout loss by Mississippi State. So Kentucky, I do think they have momentum. I think the Tennessee win was big for them, and I really like what Mark Stoops has been able to build there. I think program-wise, they are more stable than Ole Miss, so I like Kentucky to win the game, but I'm not surprised to see a close spread in this one.
Okay, the hashtag, what is it, empty Neyland game here of Southern Miss at Tennessee. You said it would be Tennessee -4, as did I. I thought it would be Tennessee -4, and it actually opened up Tennessee -7.5.
Yeah, and it has moved down since then, correct? I think it was at 5.5 earlier.
Yeah, so we were kind of closer to what it actually is now, but, you know, it was kind of surprising to me to see Tennessee favored by anyone over a touchdown. You know, they played a decent game against Kentucky, but, you know, they kind of were just run all over. They had a +4 in the turnover margin, and I believe they got 3 points out of that. It was just you can't win the turnover margin by that much and still lose a game. I didn't even know that was possible.
Yeah, Benny Snell, he kind of ran all over Tennessee, just totally controlled that game. 180 yards, 3 touchdowns. I mean, he was just. He looked like the bowling ball that he is in that game. So I think Tennessee will get a win over Southern Miss. I would God, I would think. I don't know what Knoxville. If they don't, I think that the Sun Sphere, I know I've joked about this in the past, but if they don't, I think somebody will rip down the Sun Sphere. I really do.
I don't know if you saw my tweet from late Saturday night, but it went pretty viral, and it was clearly a joke, at least I thought it was. But
yeah, look, I know exactly the one you're talking about.
After Tennessee, Butch Jones lost so many must-win games, as they were being called, I suggested that I had a source that was calling this Southern Miss game a must-win, and that one didn't go quite as well as I thought. People thought that was not a joke, but I was surprised by the reaction nonetheless to that one.
Well, the funny thing is, like, the people who didn't understand the sarcasm, they didn't get it. I totally knew it was a joke. But the funny thing is, now it looks like it was true. Like what you said, basically, you did it as a joke, but basically that's where we're at here.
Yeah, so I mean, I knew what I was doing all along. Let's just say
exactly.
That.
Exactly.
All right, the final game of the week, this is going to be the first week of two CBS games. And the final game is LSU at Alabama. You thought that Alabama would be favored by 18. I thought Alabama would be favored by 23. And Alabama opened up as a 21.5 point favorite. So I got that one.
So you said Alabama 23. I said 18. And so you got that one just by a hair there. I knew it would be somewhere in there. I think we're pretty close on that, and I would tend to lean more toward your number as far as what I think is actually going to happen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's going to be tough for LSU in this game. Obviously, they're going to need. I was on a Louisiana radio station this morning talking about the game, and you know, I think, you know, if you can recall back to the game where Pitt upset Clemson last year, it was a masterful game plan by Matt Canada. He got so much out of Nathan Peterman in that offense last year. I think that's what it's going to take for LSU to compete and possibly beat Alabama. It's just going to need a masterful game plan that kind of works around a limited quarterback. He's going to need, you know, some gimmick plays, some trick plays, and that he's going to have to hit them all. And, you know, last year I really thought Dave Aranda, as good as Lane Kiffin is, I thought Dave Aranda, you know, out-coached him. And LSU, on the defensive side of the ball at least, they deserved to beat Alabama. They only gave up 10 points, and they really only gave up two Jalen Hurts runs. And outside of those two plays, I mean, that game was a stalemate. So, you know, I obviously don't think LSU is going to win this game, but I think if a couple things come around, Arden Key's hitting, you know, he's hitting a new stride. Darius Geis has got 2 weeks to rest. It wouldn't shock me if LSU makes a game out of this.
I think it would probably shock me. Just looking around at because LSU, here's how I'm viewing LSU. I still don't think LSU is any good. Because if you look at what LSU's done the last 3 weeks, other than the upset win over Auburn, mm-hmm. in which they were down 20-0, that win over Florida at the time looked like a nice little win for them. That's not a good win. Florida is just god awful. Ole Miss, I think we've seen that Ole Miss is awful as well. They just lost to Arkansas after being up 31-7. I'm telling you, I really think that LSU is going to be exposed once again, because I still think LSU, the team, now I know they've had three straight and good for them, and that's nice, but I still think that they've got that Troy, that they're still susceptible to what we saw against Troy. I don't see anything that they've done that has really impressed me. They have not played well. They're notorious for not playing well in Tuscaloosa. Now, they, you know, they play Alabama tough in Baton Rouge, and that's fine and dandy. But I think Nick Saban's team is going to come out, and they're looking to make a statement too, because they keep hearing all this stuff about Georgia and how Georgia's going to be number one. And God forbid if Georgia comes out at number one tomorrow, I think Alabama may beat LSU by 80 points.
Oh, man, you beat me to it. I was going to say, I've already got a tweet prepared for that because, I, you know, as I noted, I think Georgia's going to be number one in the playoff rankings. and that's a terrible sign for LSU. So
exactly.
That's literally the worst thing that could happen. So if that does indeed happen, as I expect it will, it'll be interesting to see how Alabama responds to that.
Yeah, I really don't expect that LSU game to be close, but you know, we've seen stranger things in this conference, so it could happen. Anything else before we sign off here, Mike?
No, just I'm just curious to see what groomer is going to happen next, what coaching rumor we're going to get, and I've already seen about a dozen people connected to the Florida job, and it's been open for 24 hours, so. this is going to be a wild ride.
Best time of the year. November to me is always the best time of the year, because this is when we're going to get all the really, really good college football games too. Going to start getting into a lot of these big rivalry games, coaches getting canned, especially inside the SEC. I think it's going to be a lot of fun. So regardless of what happens between now and then, I guess we will discuss it on episode 24, as well as our predictions for this weekend. This has been episode number 23. Thanks again, as always, to everybody for tuning in. For SEC Mike, I'm Cody McClure. We will see you guys next time.